Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is Karma Spence, your host, and today I'm talking with Michael Soon Lee, who has been a professional speaker since 1985, focused on the topic of diversity, and he is also the author of Cross-Cultural Selling for Dummies. Welcome, Michael, to Public Speaking Superpowers.
Thank you, Karma. It's my honor.
Just so that listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to success in public speaking?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I started out in 1985, I wanted to be a great motivational speaker like, I guess, Tony Robbins. But every time I went out for one of those engagements, Zig had already beaten me to it. I mean, how do you compete with, you know, celebrities like that? So it's difficult.
Right.
But they would always ask me, do you speak on diversity? And I said, no, I don't speak on diversity because I'm a fifth-generation Chinese-American. My great-grandfather came to the United States in 1855, and so I'm as American as anybody, Karma. I'm so American, I don't even speak Chinese. Thanks to the California public school system, I speak Spanish. So I didn't think I really knew that much of it until, well, about the third time they said to me, do you speak on diversity? I said, well, okay, if you wanted something on diversity, what would it be? And I'll never forget, the California Association of Realtors said to me, well, and remember, this is 1985.
Right.
They said, we have all of these people coming out of Hong Kong coming to California because in a few years, Hong Kong will lose its lease to mainland China. And the people in Hong Kong are afraid that when their Democratic Republic gets taken over by the communists, all of their business, homes, and land will become worthless.
Right.
So they sold everything at discount prices and started buying real estate in California. And what the association said is, you know, they're driving our realtors crazy because they have all these weird beliefs like feng shui,
yeah.
Yeah, and they said, and then they negotiate everything. Just put together a class about how to sell to these people. And I started thinking, when I could do this class. My parents had taught me about feng shui.
Right.
I had been a realtor. And I'd also been a university professor, so anything I didn't know, I could research the rest.
Right.
I put together a class cleverly entitled Selling Real Estate to Asians.
And different Asian cultures have different beliefs, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But in spite of the title that stunk, people really liked it.
Yeah.
And eventually I broadened it out not just to Asians, but somebody said, well, great class about Asians, but we also have Hispanics here. Could you speak to us about Hispanics?
Right.
Why they thought I could speak about Hispanics is beyond me.
Because you're the expert on diversity, that's why.
Apparently, but, you know, being the university professor, I spoke to a lot of Hispanic realtors and their clients, and I put together the class, and people loved it. And then somebody said, well, what about African Americans? And I said, well, wait a minute, let me just put together a class on how do you sell real estate to multicultural customers, and people just loved it.
Yeah.
And then a woman came up. He said, well, you know, my husband owns an Acura dealership, and they have exactly the same problem with their multicultural new car customers as we do with our real client. Could you come to speak to Acura? So I did a lot of research and spoke to Acura, and since then I have spoken to insurance agents, financial planners, new home builders, you name it, in and around the area of how do you sell to people whose culture may be different from yours. So that has become career for the last 25 years, and I think what I learned from that, Karma, is that we may think we know what we want to speak about. Our audience will always tell us what they need us to speak about if we'll only listen. I fought it for years. I didn't want to speak on diversity, and that's what my audience wants. But if I had embraced it sooner, obviously I would have had more success.
So it sounds like, you know, one superpower would be to listen to what your audience wants.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Listening would be a great superpower. The other one, I think, would be the power to change people's minds. And that's what I'd love to have, although I don't think we have that power, really, within our grasp.
I think people can have the power to change some people's minds.
possibly, what I think we definitely have the power to do, Karma, change people's behavior, which can lead them to changing minds.
That's true.
What I do is I change salespeople's behaviors from being afraid of culture to looking for people whose culture may be different from their own, and to just ask them about culture and get over the fear. And once they get past that fear, they actually kind of find culture to be interesting, fascinating, and fun.
Right.
So I think that's the power that I feel like I bring to the professional speaking world, is the ability to change people's behavior. And I do it because there's a benefit to them, Karma. You know, I like to tell people that I do is I seduce people into being interested in diversity through the almighty dollar. What I mean by that is, with salespeople, you'll listen to me for a little bit and change your behavior a little bit to be more welcoming to people from other cultures, you'll make more money.
Right.
What I'd like to remind them is that in the first 3 seconds, most salespeople will insult a multicultural customer at least 3 times in the first 30 seconds.
That's pretty fast.
It's very fast. And if you insult people 3 times in the first 30 seconds, I mean, are they likely to do business with you?
And how do you manage to insult someone 3 times in 30 seconds?
Well, I mean, and there's more ways than that, but Karma, I'll give you a couple. I mean, number one thing we all are taught to do in sales is to shake people's hands to show that you're being friendly.
Okay.
In many cultures, that can be extremely offensive, especially to Japanese women, Middle Eastern women, Asian Indian women, and others.
Ah.
And not only to them, but to their spouses, it can be very offensive. So what I teach sales people to do is, instead of assuming that everybody wants to shake hands, let the customer tell you how they want to be greeted by hesitating for a moment and letting them show you how they want to be greeted. Do what's natural for them, and then what you do is you just follow along. But what we tend to do is we assume that everybody wants to shake hands, and that's obviously not true.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd never thought of that before, but yeah. So do you think that having the power to change someone's behavior is something that someone can learn to do? And if so, how would someone go about doing that?
Yeah, I had to learn how to do it. And that's what you do in sales. You learn how to change people's behavior by adjusting to them and doing things that are comfortable for the customer. And I think that anybody can help people to learn to change their behavior. But the challenge, Karma, is they've got to want to change first.
Right.
The way I get them to do that is by showing the benefit to them. And for salespeople, the benefit of you changing your behavior is you can make more money, increase your sales. Now, if they're not interested in that, I can't help them. But I've met too many salespeople that didn't want to make more sales.
Right. But if you were speaking to a different type of audience, then the motivator would be different.
It would be. For example, when I speak to many doctors, and they don't care about sales, but they care about providing good customer service to their patients.
Yeah.
Studies show that when a doctor provides good customer service, their chances of getting sued go way down, and that's what they're interested in. They want to provide good customer service. They also want to avoid getting sued. So again, you've got to look at your office, figure out what is their challenge. And how can we help them change their behavior so they can achieve what they want to achieve or make more of what they want to make?
Right. You know, something you said earlier just popped up in my head with the way that different cultures are different about touch. They're
right.
Also very different about personal space.
Yeah, and that would be another thing that we only talked about one. Another thing that might be offensive to people is standing too close or too far away.
Yeah, in fact, I have a very funny story about that. I was working with someone who is Italian-American, and so his personal space was very close. He liked to stand very close. Well, my personal space was larger than his personal space, so we would start a conversation on one end of the room and end it on the other because subtly I kept stepping back and he kept stepping forward. And I would step back and he would step forward.
Exactly.
And it was so unconscious that you wouldn't realize it until the conversation was over.
Exactly. What I train salespeople to do is to just be aware of other people's personal space, and you adjust to them rather than doing what's comfortable for you.
Right.
And it's a matter of awareness, so I just help people increase their awareness. And the main thing I try to do, Karma, is I try to help people to be aware of the fact that we have to adjust to other people and stop thinking that what we do on a day-to-day basis should be comfortable for everybody, because it's not necessarily the case in general.
Right. So it sounds like, you know, sort of an underlying superpower to changing someone's behavior is being open to what your audience is you know, what their comfort zone is, what their wants and needs are.
Exactly. That's true with any topic that you're presenting, Karma. You've got to know who your audience is. What keeps them awake at night? What is the pain in their lives, both personally and professionally, because they are interrelated? And how can your area of expertise help address that pain and the need in their lives?
Right. Very true.
If you do that, you're going to be very successful.
Now, a lot of what you talked about makes a lot of sense when it's like a sales situation where you're like one-on-one. It's easier to read maybe one or two people. Can you apply those same skills to like a speaker on a stage with an audience?
Oh, absolutely, because over time what you get to learn is there's some commonalities with your audience. Obviously, there's individual differences, but as speakers, what we try to do is find the common thread, the common message that kind of reaches everybody or everybody's needs. And the real art, I think, of speaking, Karma, is to drill down to a point where it helps people, but not so deeply where you start to lose large groups of people.
Okay.
So if I got too deeply into, for example, with salespeople, into like closing techniques with people from other cultures or something else like that, I might start losing people because there's differences.
Right.
But I know how far I can go with certain audiences. And I'll do a lot of research before every presentation. Many times I'll interview them on the phone. I'll interview a good percentage of people and ask them, which groups are you faced with the most and what are your biggest challenges? If it's a huge group, I'll just ask them to send emails and to answer one question. And that question would usually be, what is one thing that people from other cultures do that drive you crazy? And they just go, and by the answers I get, I know the kind of audience I have. Some audiences are really open, and they'll say, well, most people, they negotiate everything, or they talk in their own language right in front of me, and others, you know, very nice about it, but they won't say very much, and that'll give me a real good sense of my audience as well.
Right.
But it's wonderful research, and it really prepares me well for any audience.
So do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill, or do you think it's something that you're born being able to do?
Well, you know, I think basic public speaking, anybody can learn to do. I don't think anybody is, you come out of the womb and you start speaking. Some people are more verbose than the others, but good public speaking can be learned. You know, the Toastmasters groups around the world are filled with wonderful people and wonderful speakers. Great speaking, I think, is a combination of learning and, you know, God-given talent. The people that take it to the next level, people that get paid a fair amount of money to get up on a platform who can just tell a story. Because every point you make, you've got to tell a story to reinforce it. And some of us are better storytellers than others. I think anybody can learn to get up in front of an audience, present three really solid points clearly, provide a story behind it, and make it fun and make it interesting and have a great experience with their public speaking assignment.
Right. In fact, most people who use public speaking aren't trying to be, you know, keynote speakers and have a large audience. They're just trying to use it to improve their business and get more leads.
Absolutely. Anybody can learn to do that.
Right.
What a business owner will learn is once they get up in front of an audience, they have instant credibility. And you just have to learn how to use that to reach your audience. And again, what you want to do is, I mean, a business owner for sure should know, you know, what are the challenges that their audience faces and how do they solve that challenge? But you don't want to give away too much, otherwise people will say, well, there's the answer. I don't need that person. You want to give them enough that shows that you are the person that can help them, but also leave enough out so that they need your services. They don't walk away with the impression that they know everything, which of course they don't, but you could leave them with that impression if you're not careful. So it's always good to have friends come by and watch you speak and give you some feedback, and also for you to record every presentation you give, at least for the first 50 or 60, and analyze it and critique yourself.
Wow. I think Dan Kennedy says that what you do is you give them the what and the why, but not the how.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I actually give people a few of the hows. I talk about what not to do, but I also leave them wondering, well, okay, if that's what not to do to insult somebody, for example, from another culture, and what do you do?
That's a very good thing to do, is like give them the negatives, the don't do this, and that definitely would leave them hungry for the, well, what's the do?
Exactly. But there's an art to that. And again, having people listen to you and give you critiques will help you to take it to the edge where people go, man, I really need this information and I want to hire this person to help me, or I want to do business with this person. Like we say, anybody can get up you know, with a little bit of organization and preparation and give a great presentation that really can attract, you know, more business to you. And have fun doing it. And the more you do it, Karma, the better you get and the more fun it becomes.
Now, let's say someone is going to be giving a presentation in front of an audience that is a different culture from their own. Since it's not a one-on-one thing, so you can't do like the hesitation, how does someone speak to that audience so that audience is open to their message?
Well, in my book, Cross-Cultural Selling for Dummies, we do talk about how you meet and greet people properly, because a business owner who's holding a presentation in front of potential clients will probably want to meet every one of them personally as they come in the door, and that warms you up as well. And just remember, let the other person tell you how they want to be greeted. Don't necessarily shake hands with people automatically. Watch your personal space. The other thing when you're on the platform and you're speaking to other audiences is to recognize that eye contact is not the same around the world. And so you won't always get a lot of eye contact, for example, from Asians, because they want to show respect to the speaker, and the way they do that is not by giving you eye contact, Karma, but by actually looking away. So when they're looking away, they're actually showing you respect and they're paying attention. So you have to recognize cultural differences, and you have to remember that different cultures learn differently. So, for example, African Americans tend to be more auditory. So, you know, they love listening to presentations. They love being on the cell phone. They love auditory. But Hispanics, for example, tend to be more kinesthetic than any other kind of learning style. So you got to have little group presentations for them. Let them meet each other. Let them interact with other people. It's all about building community. Asians tend to be more visual than other groups because their language is built totally on pictures. And so you got to use PowerPoint or give handouts so they can read it, because they don't like listening to lectures as much as other groups might. You got to recognize cultural differences even amongst your audience members.
Now, that's interesting that you brought up the three learning styles, because from research I've done, I understand that the vast majority of human population tends to be visual, and kinesthetic is the rarest, and yet I know myself, I'm kinesthetic, and I just so happen to be half Spanish. So I wonder if there's like a genetic component to it.
There is, and there's study and research on it. If you go on the web, you'll see that. And obviously not all Hispanics are kinesthetic, but there's a tendency to be, you know, likelihood to be more kinesthetic. And it really depends on the audience you're speaking to. For example, if you're a building contractor and you're talking to a group of other contractors, you're going to find most of them are kinesthetic, because that trade attracts people that tend to be more kinesthetic. If you're working with accountants, they tend to be more visual. So you got to know your audience.
Right. Your target audience could be more of one learning style over the other because of their profession in addition to their culture.
Exactly. So again, you've just got to go back to knowing your audience.
Very interesting. Well, I have found this conversation to be very interesting. Thank you so much, Michael, for sharing your information with Public Speaking Superpowers. This is Karma Spence signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.